So I'll join with everyone. Thank you for coming on this early and otherwise busy day. And I'm one of those nasty scientists that John keeps talking about. So but I'll try to be try to explain some of the ways that we can actually be good partners. I think one of the ways to make that happen is to have folks like John who continue to, you know, beat into us what our responsibilities are and then to respond to those. And so we're grateful. So our community, I just changed institutions. So some of this work is what we have done in the past. And our missions and goals and objectives have not really changed, but they're now being built back up at Texas A&M. So we're looking forward to doing that. But overall, our program translates environmental health science research discoveries to put the public opinion leaders and policymakers in a way that allows individuals, communities, and families, parents, et cetera, to make informed decisions about health. Our programs enhance scientific literacy. We communicate about appropriate assessment of risk. You know, risk assessment is not something that any of us do particularly well. And so we try to talk about appropriate assessment of risk. And I have lots of examples of what inappropriate assessment of risk is. People who will drive to work but are afraid to take a plane, you know, those kinds of things. So getting folks to understand how to appropriately assess risk is hard for everybody, and it's one of our major issues. We're interested in engaging communities, especially minority and global populations, with the overall purpose of preventing and reducing environmental exposures and disease, and to outreach and educate and inform policymakers. And basically, we're trying to lay a foundation for change. Our foundation is based on recruitment of bright young minds into the scientific field, encouragement, providing additional support and resources to the educational community, and also to work with public policymakers in an environmental justice framework. And there's a variety of ways that we try to accomplish that. Generally, our target audiences include the general public, particularly communities, especially those at increased risk, and their opinion leaders. And one of the tricks we've learned, and it sounds like it is a trick, but it's not meant to be a trick, is that teachers are amongst the most important opinion leaders in communities. And so we have worked extensively with teachers, K-12 teachers, and the educational community, not only for its own sake, which is to try to make education, enhance education and have it more expansive and more beneficial to a larger variety of students, but also because teachers can help us get into communities and provide opportunities and vouch for us. And we also work with policymakers. So we have a variety of different things that we try to do. We make use of electronic and social media. So we do video blogs and audio blogs. We have a number of YouTube videos. I encourage you to look at the Mentors of Science Park, which is a very long, so long, a YouTube video that we actually had to break it into two pieces because I didn't know at the time that YouTube videos could only be so long, right? But it's really interesting. It follows a series of students that come to us in the summer and do bench research. We have a variety of websites, including the Mentors Project website, which features a series of interviews with a diverse group of scientists. Pictured here is Dr. Lovell Jones, one of the forefront, on the forefront of health disparities research for many years. And so we asked him to sit down and talk very honestly, openly, and casually about what was the trajectory of his career. How did he get there? And we have a very diverse group of scientists doing that. We have Latinas, we have African Americans, we have Caucasians, we have a variety of different types of folks from different walks of life. And we know that, for example, with Latinas, some of the problems are, if I want to, maybe I want to do this, but what about a family? You know, I'm not willing to give up a family for anything. And their parents are very nervous about this. Latina women, especially folks from down in the border, you know, sometimes they get amazing educational opportunities that they end up turning down, you know, these fabulous scholarships to Harvard and MIT and Yale because it's going to take them too far away from home and their parents don't like it, and then they won't be having a family. And it's devastating. It's heartbreaking. So how do you get past that? How do you get around that? How do you talk to them about the fact that you can have a family? You can do it all. You just can't, as my dear dad used to say, you can't do it all at the same time. But you can do it if you're willing to be patient. We also use traditional media outlets like newspapers, so we write articles in local newspapers in a comprehensible language about important topics for that community, healthy eating, the obesity epidemic. We know now, we've known for many years, do some lovely work done that Texas children are amongst the most obese. We have recent data that shows that the level of morbid obesity, this is BMIs of over 35, right, is three times the national average. Morbid obesity in the small Hispanic towns along the Texas-Mexico border and along the Ship Channel. So we are we're obviously very concerned about this. So when the principle that we use is that minority communities, underserved communities, are always suffer disproportionately from environmental contaminants. They also suffer the combined stresses of increased environmental exposures, lack of resources, and other contributing factors. One of the communities that we just assessed that has the level of morbid obesity that three times the national average in children is also what we call a food desert. There's very little access to high quality fresh fruits and vegetables, and the soil is so contaminated that we can't advocate a community garden. And so that's part of the issues that we're dealing with. So we have town halls and community science events, and one of the ones that was the most successful was based on healthy food. And what we did was we brought in a wonderful man named Malcolm Beck, who talked extensively about organic farming. And we had a local healthy top chef competition, and we judged the food, and I got to be a judge. It was really fun. Here's a trick. How do you get the community to come to Community Science Night? Food is one way, but I'll tell you another, a better way. Have their kids bring their science projects and display them. And then you get the parents to come. In fact, we've had parents say, yeah, you guys be quiet. I want to go see my kid's science project. So you can sneak a little bit of science in when you do that. And this was another one that we did. This was mostly for the kids. We brought in Michael Hicks of the Capital of Texas Zoo, and he did this fabulous hands-on, the role of predators in the environment. He brought in all these great animals, and the kids just went nuts. We also do outreach to study populations. This is an important component of being responsible to the communities that participate in this research. So we go back, take the data back to the communities and say, this is what it says, this is what it doesn't say, and this is the interpretation as we have it at this moment. One of our most important activities is our K-12 Summer Institute for Educators. The teachers from around the state of Texas attend this free of charge. We've had over, when we do the impact assessment with the teachers that attend, we've impacted over 139,000 students in the state of Texas. And those aren't funny numbers, those are real numbers. That's from the teachers that come to the Institute. So we're very, very proud of that. We have summer educator fellowships where teachers come work with us over the summer and develop materials for use in classrooms because they understand better than we do what they need in their classroom. What we've learned over the course of time is that there's a lot of really wonderful curricula that scientists have helped to develop that's sitting on shelves collecting dust. Why? Because it doesn't meet the needs of classroom teachers. It doesn't get implemented because it works against their lesson plan instead of with their lesson plan. We learn not to do it that way. So how do you fix it? You bring teachers in. You say, what do your students need? And they say, well, they don't really understand graphing. So we work together to come up with examples of teaching activities that the students can learn how to interpret a graph. Scientists are perfect to help with this, since that's sort of something we do all the time. So you work collaboratively with teachers to identify the things that they're actually going to use in their classroom. And what we bring to the table is our examples of ways that environmental health science can be brought into the classroom through various types of activities. So you have to teach the science, and you can also incorporate some of the scientific literacy and awareness of environmental issues. We also bring kids in for field experiences. This is a barrel of fun. As young as fourth graders, all the way up through high school. And this is, in fact, the front picture is me in a hat several years ago. Those were fourth graders, fourth, fifth, and sixth graders. And the hat was about, we talked about sun exposure and how to prevent sun exposure. So we wore hats and we talked about sun protection and stuff like this, because this is a real practical thing that people can do, because what we know is that your risk of skin cancer is not only genetic, it's environmental. It has to do with the number of sunburns that you get before the age of 21. So this is exactly the age, or even younger, that we need to be talking to kids about not getting sunburned, because it will impact their risk. We can impact risk. We also take kids on field experiences like this one, where we took them to a landfill and said, okay, this is where trash goes. This is what happens to it. We also took them to a recycling plant. There were rats. The parents were not happy. But we did it anyway, because we wanted these kids to understand what actually happens when you throw something in the garbage. Because we're all so disconnected from that. What actually happens? Well, it goes in that big landfill you see there. That you see the tractor trailer rig there. See how big that hole is with it. That's a tractor trailer. Okay, that hole that big will get filled in 2.5 years. That's serious. So we try to encourage environmental stewardship. We do projects in the schools. This one I just love. This is the sixth grade students did an entire mural on Love Canal as one of their projects. And they did this all. They researched it. What happened? What was the remediation? What were the chemicals? They've got pictures. It was just beautiful. Very interesting. We also, these students found that in their community there had been an inadvertent and illegal dump of toxic chemicals in the waste area of their community. They brought in the city commissioners and had a town hall. The audience was the students. They put this on with we were the supporting project, but they put this on themselves. They invited the county commissioners, they invited the mayor, they invited the local regulatory people, and they sat them up in front of a group of people and asked them questions. And the group of people was them. So it was pretty impressive. Got written up on the paper, so we liked it. We have summer undergraduate programs. I'll rush through these. I also obviously didn't plan this very well in terms of time, where we provide hands-on bench experiences for high school and undergraduate students. We also do some policy work, not as much as some other folks and not as much as what we'd like to do going forward, but we have talked to joint legislative committees about nutrition and health in schools. Additionally, all of our programs are as carefully and effectively evaluated in terms of impact as we possibly can. How do you evaluate a community science night? How do you do that? That's tough, right? So one of the things we did is we asked in the survey is, what did you learn tonight? Did you learn anything new tonight that you didn't know before? And that was informative to us. What did you learn tonight? What was the benefit to you? So in summary, we have what we hope is a comprehensive and cohesive program that engages the community, promotes health, enhances scientific literacy, and stimulates interest in science, public, and medical careers, especially for a diverse audience. You know, one of the biggest problems, if you look at our medical and scientific and public health workforce, is that it's nowhere near diverse enough. And so one of the things that we try to do is to encourage pursuit of these careers amongst a very diverse group of students. And we are pleased to, and that's really such a labor of love, because there's so much fun to work with. And that's it.